Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another quarantined episode of Sports is Life podcast. And
was this the third quarantined episode?
And in that quarantine, we have hit a milestone. Over 2 years ago, we started this thing, and apparently we, I don't know what you want to call it, but somehow or another, we got to 50 episodes.
Yeah, I don't know how we did it either, but...
By hook or by crook. We hope that everybody's staying as safe as possible. Still at home, still not essential.
Still at home being the operative word.
But what happened was, this whole coronavirus thing, like, everybody already knew that Florida was crazy beforehand, but every 24 hours it seems like something happens, it's just like, well, that's Florida for you. Now, as we all know, I love wrestling, I love watching WWE, whatever. However, I was not expecting WWE to count on the list of essential businesses in the world.
Because newsflash, it's not.
But according to the Florida state government, WWE is considered essential business.
Yes, that's it. Or according to the fact that the owner of the WWE is also married to the owner... to the current CEO of a Cheeto in Chief super pact, we are now get to why the WWE is an essential business and can run in their training facility.
I will say that I have gotten used to watching Raw and SmackDown with no fans in a little small arena. WrestleMania, for all intents and purposes, was actually a very decent undertaking. I think that they did pretty well considering the circumstances, as far as like the matches and the overall entertainment was concerned. Undertaker had a pretty cool match that they filmed 2 or 3 weeks before WrestleMania, and they filmed it like an old school horror movie.
Oh dear God.
It was pretty dope.
I guess I'm having a hard time with anything that's like dope or cool that's also happening that's going to make us stay inside for longer. I'm having a hard time reconciling those things.
I'm all for them doing little small shows, but be considered an essential business is like, okay, let's... I mean, we know where the money's going. They're back to doing live shows now.
The WWE is definitely in a precarious financial situation, let's be really honest. That's why they feel like they need to do this, but...
Especially since Vince, as quick as he said he was going to risk $350 million over the next 3 years for the XFL, well, he ain't got to wait that long because the XFL is gone.
It is gone. They filed for bankruptcy.
If only organizations could be like Wimbledon, who making money out of this coronavirus.
Right. Wimbledon decided that they were going to pay, you know, the $2 million that they had to pay every year as part of their overall insurance policy to make sure they were covered for global pandemics. And so when one occurred, they get a nice $144 million payout. And unlike so many other tournaments, they just said, we'll see you in 2021.
I guess you want to call it forward-thinking that a sports organization would do that? Or... do you want to call it just luck? I mean, but then luck, you can't even say it was good luck or bad luck because...
Right. I mean, as somebody who's dealt with insurance for, like, events, you're always doing enough, right? You're always trying to make sure that you have enough insurance to cover anything that might happen. So you get a plan that covers the most likely of things. And obviously, budgets are always tight. You're trying to do a lot with a little. So I do understand not getting pandemic insurance, like, because the last one was in 1918, you know, or probably, you know, it's been about 102 years, about the right time for another one. But by the same token, being overprepared is what is helpful here, too.
Speaking of 2021, that might be when we will see a lot of high school basketball players who pretty much bypass college and get to play in the NBA. We mentioned some time ago that the NBA had created a pathway for kids who didn't necessarily want to go to college, that they could still find their way in the NBA through the G League.
And they didn't want to play in Europe.
This year, we're about to see a bunch of fruits of that labor.
Right. I think the caveat to this is that the talks have broken down between the league and the players around getting rid of the one-and-done rule. I don't know what's broken down in those talks. It might even just be that there's more pressing matters, but the NBA leadership has decided that they want to take more of an interest in this, especially after players like LaMelo Ball decided to go play in Australia for a year. So it's like, if you're not going to go to college, going to Europe doesn't make a ton of sense if you can play in the United States somewhere.
The group that will full advantage of this that may not be the superstars that we might all feel like, I don't think Zion Williamson would have gone this route. Because in the grand scheme of things, somebody who's like a top phenom that everybody knows about will probably have more exposure going to college for a year anyway than somebody who takes the G League route.
Agreed. I think that this year is specific in why players are interested, because, which I don't think we talked about yet, but the number one high school player, Jalen Green, has announced that he is going to go through the G League's program. I think that our current situation and not knowing when colleges are going to be back in session, when we're going to be able to do these things again, is actually the catalyst for this happening, because it is more likely that the G League will be playing some version of basketball in 2020 than it is that colleges will be playing some version of basketball, college basketball, in 2020. That's just the realistic situation. And so him being able to go there means that he gets to play. He gets to play as part of, you know, get legitimate practice, you know, instead of just being, you know, at home working with a trainer. There are other players expected to join him.
We have no idea when sports will be back. We have no idea in what form they will be back. As of right now, none of these sports organizations know what being back means. We're not talking about Tiger being back. We're not talking about Michael coming back. This is like real life existence.
Right. They have no idea. And anybody that tells you that they have an idea, they're lying. Or just wishful. They're speaking optimistically.
Well, the NFL hasn't necessarily been affected majorly by this coronavirus yet, because they haven't needed to operate until the summer. The only thing that's been affected is, as we just mentioned, the NFL doing their draft virtually, with Roger Goodell apparently announcing picks from the basement of his house. But apparently the NFL still thinks that everything is a go right now as far as their schedule is concerned, and starting on time in September.
I think it's they think they're going to start on time in September with 70,000 fans. I can tell you right now, one of those fans will not be me. I probably wasn't going to go to an NFL game anyway, but I am not going anywhere with 70,000 people. I don't know that that's going to happen in 2020.
And the thing is, if it's not safe for any fans to be there, then, I mean, it begs the question, is it safe for players to be there, for coaches, I've heard the NFL talk about how they were going to have a limited number of fans at these games. I mean, unless they're sitting at the top of the stadium, which, once again, the fact that that many people being together at the same time is just, at the moment, just unrealistic in the current climate. So,
correct.
The real part about this situation is that us as American sports consumers, we're stubborn and hard-headed. So if the NFL wants to continue, I guarantee there are going to be a slew of people who are going to be hard-headed enough to go watch plenty of NFL games on week one. I don't know. It just seems like a bad idea all the way around.
I mean, I tend to agree, but I also think that the NFL's fan base is old, number one. Like, they have the oldest all the league's actual fan bases. So that is number one. So if you have the oldest of all of the different groups, then I feel like you are, your fan base fits right into that slot of people who are most at risk for the disease. Is that what you want to be dealing with? Maybe that's just me. But
NFL, I mean, they don't really care. I don't think anybody really cares at this point, because at the end of the day, what life is about is making money, especially for any organization. I mean, I don't know how that's going to calculate into the whole scheme of the economy returning, which at this point, the economy probably won't be normal ever again. But even returning to any point of normalcy is going to be a long time from now. But I don't know.
I don't either. I think that's the whole point is that we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know if, in order for them to play the games with fans, you're going to be taking people's temperature. You know what I mean? When you walk in the building, like after 9/11, they implemented all of these different security measures. Like, we got TSA at the airports. This will change things. And how does it change things? To what level does it change things? I think we just don't know. And I think that it is, on some level, naive to believe that we're going to figure all of that out, because it's what, the middle of April now? The NFL officially begins at the beginning of September, but typically teams have open practice during training camp. So effectively beginning at the beginning of, you know, the middle of July, when the preseason typically starts, are we going to know what the new protocols and procedures should be by then? Especially since we don't know when we're just going to be able to leave our house without wearing a mask. Like, that's where we're at right now. We're getting places where, like, and I live in Maryland, and as of tomorrow morning, we all have to have masks on whenever we leave the house. Like, states are still making more stringent, except Florida.
On the other hand, the PGA Tour seems to have, I don't know, it feels like the PGA Tour might be have the most realistic model for returning to action, mostly because, I mean, you can play a golf tournament, it's easy to play a golf tournament with no fans, because they've done it over and over again.
Correct.
But the PGA Tour has revised its entire schedule. Obviously, we mentioned last podcast that the British Open or Open Championship took the Wimbledon route and was like, we'll see you in 2021. The PGA Championship that was supposed to be played in May has been rescheduled to August. And the U.S. Open has now been rescheduled in the fall, late fall. So,
and the Masters.
Masters is in November. So now you have the PGA Championship, which they were a little less than halfway through their regular season when everything came to a halt. They're basically going to come back with a short schedule, and the PGA Tour usually starts its new regular season schedule in September. But basically, with the U.S. Open and the Masters rescheduling to the end of the fall, the 2020-2021 PGA Tour season is going to basically have 6 majors.
That just feels ridiculous.
It does. So it's going to be 2 Masters and 2 U.S. Opens. At the end of the day, once again, this is best case scenario.
Right. This is like all these things that are scheduled towards like the end of the summer and things like that. They don't know if they're actually going to be able to have them on those dates. They're just picking a date in the sun and saying this is what we're going to reschedule it for because we think it's far enough out.
Like PGA Tour is planning on restarting their season in May with no fans at all, which, I mean, I guess, but I don't know. Ain't no telling what it's going to look like when things happen again. I don't even want to say return to normal because they're once again, there's going to be a new normal when we're able to do stuff again.
You know, everybody loved Dr. Fauci. Well, all of us normal people love him. He is the head of infectious diseases at NIH. I actually met him several years ago because I was back in the day when I was planning STEM events in the world. I had an event with him and at a high school up in, I want to say Montgomery County, kind of in the DMV area. And he did a talk, and we actually talked about how he was the head of all the research on the Zika virus for NIH and everything like that. So that was really interesting because I never thought that like that memory would be then associated with another set of memories years later. But he said that it is not really realistic to have fans in stadiums or arenas until 2021 because, again, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people in a small space.
Petri dish.
So the NBA and the Major League Baseball are discussing ideas for how to continue their seasons in some sort of secluded concept. So whether it's MLB playing only in Arizona, utilizing the fields that they use for spring training, and keeping all the players in Arizona for the duration of the season, and they only play there, that sounds like it could be possible. It also sounds a little crazy because you're essentially going to have to quarantine people away from their families for 182 games.
They also said that they were going to basically regroup all the divisions according to where they play spring training at. So the divisions of Major League Baseball, as you know it, would not exist.
Which just seems weird. I feel like we just let Major League Baseball hang out and not have a season and let the Nationals just be reigning champions for longer. That, I'm okay with that. For the NBA, they're talking about potentially playing all of their games in Vegas. So you basically be taking these NBA players. Theirs would be at least a shortened amount of time. It would basically be some version of finishing the regular season and then into the playoffs. There could even be a scenario where they go straight to the playoffs and use the final standings to say this is who's going to make it, which would allow them to cut down the number of teams from, 32 to 16, which also would help with the ability, like, slow the spread or not have spread. But the interesting thing is some of the articles that have been talking about this that have kind of really gotten into the nitty-gritty of the actual logistics of how this would happen. I mean, you're talking about quarantining entire teams, staff, broadcast crew, facility staff, referees, players, coaches. But then you have to go down to quarantining, like, hotel staff, like, because where are these people going to stay, right? Bus drivers that take the players to and from. But if a player leaves, say you have a death in the family or a child being born, not that parents are being allowed into, both parents are being allowed into delivery rooms these days either, but if you go see that child, like, you have to be quarantined on each side of that. Like, so that means you could lose a month of time with the player because they've had something that they need to go do outside of kind of the situation. So there are so many moving parts to even get to a scenario where they could even execute a seclusion. And people would really have to buy in and be okay with, like, be like, hey, yeah, I'll give you 9 months in the case of, like, Major League Baseball to hang out and, you know, be quarantined in Arizona.
If we want to take another real life impact of this virus. So, you know, the next big sport that is coming up that people were looking forward to was college football. And recently, Vice President Pence met with the commissioners of the Power Five?
Basically. And then, Notre Dame's AD was also on. The Power Five, the commissioners.
Which, I guess that's okay. I mean, I we get that sports is important to the fabric of American society, but...
And sports is what started this. Like, we ended up in lockdown because sports moved first. We can't forget that. Now, whether or not our elected national figures should be spending as much time with the commissioners and of sports leagues, that is a question mark, because there are lots of other things they could be doing. But they met with Vice President Pence. For college sports to be played is a different conversation than for pro sports. Pro sports, they have their unions, they have their commissioners. They can work that out amongst themselves. They're all adults. They're being paid. It is a job. They can say, I'm willing to take the risk. Whereas college sports, these are unpaid athletes that are supposed to be getting an education. And can we just think about how it would look if colleges have not reopened to students, but yet you're going to let not all college athletics happen, just college football?
Well, it brings in most money.
It brings in the most money, but it also just reinforces the belief that it's only about money anyway, and that the education that these players are getting is not worth anything. So I was kind of proud that the commissioners understood and, you know, told the vice president that, like, if kids aren't coming back to campus and education is not resuming, we can't really bring back one group of students to say, hey, go play football. Like, I'm glad that they got that, because with some of the boneheaded things that the NCAA and the Power Five conference commissioners do, I can be concerned sometimes if they miss the little simple things.
College student athletes, their worlds have been turned upside down. I mean, this is filtered all the way down to ain't no telling what you're going to be able to do with recruiting. How are you going to be able to talk? How are you going to be able to bring in, like, high school recruits into your program?
Well, I mean, at this point, all the camps have been canceled for the summer, I think, for most schools. So,
I mean, how are students going to, you know, verify their grades? I mean...
Well, the verifying the grades part is probably the only thing that can work as seamlessly as it did before. We're at a place where the SAT College Board is trying to figure out how to administer an ACT and SAT next fall if this continues, because nobody knows. So then college admissions directors are going to be all over the place after that. Because, I mean, that'll affect, you know, recruiting and how that operates. Because if the school's saying, you know what, we don't need SAT scores, does that mean that that there's not that academic requirement?
For real?
For college football players? I mean, I feel like at that moment, coaches everywhere will be like, so we gonna get everybody we knew couldn't qualify for school into school. Like, don't worry about getting that test score, just get that too, or whatever that lowest GPA you can get is, and get into school.
Oh, wow. If that became the new normal, Lord help us.
I mean, but like, is it going to be the new normal? Is it going to be for just 1 year? Who knows? But yeah, there's a lot that needs to happen in order for college football to start or to come back.
Happy day, because on Sunday, April 19th, 2 months early, ESPN heard the cries, they heard the pleas, and the Bulls' Last Dance is going to premiere on ESPN Sunday night. And if you don't know, Bulls' Last Dance is a documentary on the last championship season of the Chicago Bulls. It was the last season that Jordan was in Chicago before everything went haywire. The tension between the team and the general manager, Jerry Krause. That was a very interesting dynamic that obviously those of us who just watched sports and basketball at that time had no clue what was going on. But we just knew that it was probably going to be Michael Jordan's last season in Chicago. And the other crazy part about that is that next season was the strike-shortened season.
Yes.
That was crazy how all that happened. Michael Jordan left and then basketball left. And that was the season before Shaq went to the Lakers. And then, obviously, him and Kobe pretty much brought the NBA through to a new era. Because ain't no telling what would have happened.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have been Tim Duncan and Dave Robinson who won the championship during the shortened season. The fact that this is a 10-part series is kind of insane to me.
Well, I mean, they basically told a camera crew to follow them around from the first day of training camp all the way through. And that's this one. I still feel like ESPN should just drop all 10 parts at the same time and just let us watch it. I mean, it ain't like we doing anything else.
But it does look like the series is really going to be chronicling Michael Jordan's career, like from high school on, in addition to The Last Dance, like the final season. So it sounds like it's going to be more in depth on Jordan than it is just going to be only, you know, that last season for 10 hours.
He was the heartbeat of all those sports back then. I know we talked about wrestling earlier, and, you know, obviously WWE still happens to exist right now in a live fashion, but Ronda Rousey made some headlines last week talking about, you know, asking if she was going to come back to WWE, and, you know, she referred to wrestling fans in general as a-holes, and that, you know, wrestling fans were ungrateful. And apparently this all stemmed from how wrestling fans reacted to her near the end of her initial run in WWE. I think, you know, to give you guys a little bit of wrestling 101, basically most of the wrestling fans thought that her character was getting stale. So they started booing her, even though she was a good guy, quote-unquote.
I mean, was her character getting stale? I feel like wrestling fans didn't love her to be start with. But I also feel like it wasn't really her wheelhouse to begin with.
Well, they definitely welcomed her in to the world of professional wrestling. And it was all cool, but one of her weaknesses was she couldn't cut a promo. And for non-wrestling people, promo is like when you basically have the microphone in your hand. You need to know how to talk and how to entertain the people, and she didn't really do that. Especially in today's day and age when, you know, everybody knows that it's a show, everybody knows it's entertainment. You need to be able to, your success depends on how you entertain the people when you talk. a lot, and she couldn't do that. So they turned on her, and then, you know, I guess it got under her skin. I mean, initially when she left, she said that she was leaving because she wanted to start a family.
Did she start a family?
She hasn't started a family yet. And then she came back and, you know, said she didn't feel like she was, or in so many words, that she didn't feel like it was fair to sacrifice herself for fake fighting, which, look, those of us who watch it religiously, we know it's not, you know, we know it's not MMA. So don't try and, you know, make us look bad because you're in your feelings about how the crowd reacts to you. Like, this is the same Ronda Rousey who used to talk so much trash about her opponents in MMA and dog them out and, you know, call them B-words and all that stuff. And it was cool when she was winning, but right. She acted like a sourpuss when she got knocked out those two times. And she was, you know, talking about how she was thinking about ending her life and all that stuff that came in when she lost. And it's like, yo, you keep acting like a sore loser, like every single time something doesn't go your way. And, you know, I was a Ronda Rousey fan back in the day, but how she reacted after she got knocked out in MMA changed my mind. And now what she's doing is like a slap in the face to wrestling fans. And maybe it's all part of the storyline for when she actually returns. They've talked about that quite a bit, but I don't think she's going to get the reaction that she thinks she might get if she comes back. One, because there ain't going to be no fans. And I don't think anybody's going to really care about what she has to offer the second time around. So, I don't know. I think it's real. I think she probably should just hush and keep it moving. Especially when you know, call out the fans. Because wrestling fans in themselves are very, like, forgiving as a community. Like, you know, like when wrestlers want to just up and leave and like go do something else, i.e. The Rock, Brock Lesnar, like we're hurt, but it's like,
everybody.
Yeah, but when you come back, you know, you get that love. It's the same. Yeah. It's not the same when you like basically call us jerks and, you know, call us names and stuff. And it's not even like you were a wrestler to begin with. Like, you were an MMA fighter who became a wrestler. So, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that on some level, it is two different skill sets. Like, MMA requires you to just be good on the ring, and then wrestling really requires you to be a good entertainer. Like, you need to have that. That's why so many wrestlers, I think, go on to be actors in some way, because they already kind of have that that knack for entertaining a crowd. Mm-hmm. Which is also why I think, I mean, you guys saw Ronda Rousey in like Fast and the Furious, whichever one she was in. She wasn't good on camera. Like, she's not an overly charismatic person. Yeah. So I never thought she would be great at wrestling, at the kind of the wrestling world. And it's why she was good at MMA when she was winning, because she was just winning. Like, it just required her to be good at her sport. It didn't require her to be necessarily a great entertainer specifically, because the entertainment was derived from her sport. It's the same thing with like any professional athlete that isn't necessarily a extrovert or somebody who has it.
and this is something that I've mentioned when we did our podcast on WrestleMania last year. And that is, she probably would have been better off had she debuted as a quote-unquote bad guy that didn't necessarily talk, that had somebody that was like her manager, that was her mouthpiece, that spoke for her, that knew how to rile up the fans. The way that she would be perceived probably would have been a lot better off had she come in as a bad guy instead of, you know, like having everybody cheer for her at the very beginning, because, you know, at the end of the day, here we are.
And we end this episode on a sad note. Karl Anthony Towns' mother died from coronavirus, like so many others. It's just kind of weird to see somebody associated with the sports world, because so many athletes have had the virus and have all recovered, because in theory, they are all young and healthy and in the best physical shape ever. So it's still really sad to see like somebody that's part of that extended community not make it. Because I guess to some degree, and this is also incredibly sad, is that there haven't been many people with a quote-unquote name that have died that people would recognize in some way, shape, or form, whether it's as a sports fan, as a fan of pop culture. The people that like make this really real, like the you know, thousands of people have died, but we don't know who they are, like unless they are your family member. And obviously we want it to stop, but it is a moment of just like, goodness.
Our nature as Americans, that whether we want to admit it or not, we're still very naive. Even right now, when it comes to, you know, how we've handled this virus thus far. And a lot of us are still naive because it hasn't hit home for us.
Yep.
You know, unfortunately, and, you know, we're in the business of talking about sports, like, Karl Anthony Towns is the face of, you know, having an athlete that is hit hard for him. If it wasn't him, it was his mother. And, you know, a lot of us have lost a mom. Unfortunately, I haven't. I don't know how I'm going to react. I don't know how – nobody knows how they're going to react when they lose their mom. But when they,
dude,
you know.
Dude, I can tell you right now, nobody's going to want to be around me. Like, I will be a disaster. Like, not even a pretend, a literal disaster. Like, I have to limit, my mom has to have like a limit on the amount of time we can talk on the phone, because we can go from saying hello to 6 hours late, 6 hours later, and not even think twice about it.
And not even losing your mom to like natural causes or a car accident. This is something that could have easily been prevented, something that you don't even know when it happened, when you caught it. One of those here today, gone tomorrow things. And at the same time, it's not like you can be there, because being in hospitals and stuff, nobody's allowed in.
Right.
You can't even visit your family. I mean, all the people who've lost somebody due to this virus and they haven't even been able to say their goodbyes. Like, that's the most...
Or people who have lost somebody that have not been related to this virus because of overruns in hospitals and things like that, that are inevitably causing additional deaths, or people that lose people just randomly that have nothing to do with this, but they still can't have a funeral. They still can't say goodbye. Shoot, all the babies being born that, like, dads can't be in the delivery room. Like, this thing is, like... It's so much bigger than just, hey, sit in your house. It's, hey, sit in your house, wear your mask, follow directions, so that maybe sooner rather than later we can all go outside and play again. And that people can actually grieve properly and deal with their life.
Well, on that note, everybody continue to take care of each other, follow, you know, social distance as much as you possibly can. That was a somber way to end, but, you know, it is our golden episode, episode number 50. Here's to trying to find out what we're going to talk about on episode 51. Have some champagne in our honor.